Welcome into the Dean's List, a brief analysis of news and culture from a biblical worldview.
Oh, the gospel.
This is the broadcast in which we seek to faithfully proclaim that the gospel indeed will overcome.
In a world full of sorrow, by evil overrun.
It's Tuesday, May 6, 2014.
When darkness is veiled.
I'm Paul Dean.
The light of the sun. We know that the gospel.
Educators are supposed to be educated. Yet a teacher and officials at a Broward County public school banned a fifth grader from reading the Bible during free reading time. Breitbart reports that Giovanni Rubio, a fifth grade student, decided he'd like to read his Bible, now listen to this, during the time in class where students are allowed to read anything they choose. Now his teacher, Sornia Thomas, told him that he wasn't allowed to read the Bible in her class, and she ordered him to put it away. Well, Giovanni asked her to call his father, Paul Rubio, about the incident, and Thomas did so, the teacher, and she left a voicemail that included these words, quote, I noticed that Giovanni has a book, a religious book, in the classroom. He is not permitted to read those books in my classroom. Well, Rubio then contacted the school's principal, Orinthia Diaz, who, well, brought in the school's legal department, and none of them are willing to acknowledge that Giovanni has a constitutional right to read the Bible. Well, so much for educated educators. Here's my question. What's so difficult to understand this reality? On the one hand, the government cannot force religion upon people. On the other hand, they cannot prevent people from exercising their religion. Is that very difficult? Do people really believe you can't read a Bible simply because you're on government property? Now, obviously, there's a violation of religious freedom here, and we could talk about that, and, well, we do that so often, so we'll leave it off here, but there's also an insult to our collective intelligence here. Talk about the inmates running the asylum. It also seems to be beyond the grasp of most that this teacher, like anyone else, is pushing her worldview, her religion, on her students, not only in this situation, but of course in everything she teaches. Everything has a worldview behind it. There is no such thing as neutrality. In other words, the subject matter can be presented as if there is no God, or as if there is a God, and that makes all the difference in how you present the material. But there is certainly no middle ground. But here's the question for you and for me. Is it any surprise that our country is coming apart at the seams? Don't kid yourself that you have no Sornia Thomases in your local school. I mean, whether the issue in this case is hostility to religion or simple ignorance, regardless of the issue, it doesn't really matter. The outcome is the same. Children are being taught by the Sornia Thomases of the world, hour after hour, day after day, year after year. What do you expect our culture to look like over time then? And here's the most disturbing reality of all. If we Christian parents don't somehow take responsibility for the education of our own children and get involved in that process, then that begs the question as to who the real inmates are. In other news, an activist films her own abortion, and in so doing, she raises the question of what's right. Now, on the way to talking about that issue directly, let me mention the iconic movie Casablanca. Casablanca ends up being about putting personal feelings aside for the more important effort of fighting for freedom in the war. Now, Ilsa, the female lead, thinks her husband, Victor, one of the two male leads, is dead and falls in love with Rick, the other male lead, who loves her back. Well, Victor turns up alive, and Ilsa leaves Rick when she finds out. As time goes by, she and Rick end up meeting again, and she vows never again to leave him. In the last scene, the cynical and sidelined Rick becomes a hero when he joins the fight. Now, I want you to hear the dialogue. He's trying to put Ilsa on a plane to be with her husband, Victor, even though she thinks she's going to stay there with Rick. Rick says, I'm saying it because it's true. inside of us. We both know you belong with Victor. You're part of his work, the thing that keeps him going. If that plane leaves the ground and you're not with him, you'll regret it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon and for the rest of your life. Well, Ilsa, of course, asked the question, well, what about us? And Rick says, we'll always have Paris. We didn't have. We lost it until you came to Casablanca, and we got it back last night. And Ilsa says, I said I would never leave you. And Rick responds by saying, and you never will. But I've got a job to do, too. And where I'm going, you can't follow. And what I've got to do, you can't be any part of. Ilsa, I'm no good at being noble, but it doesn't take much to see that the problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. And someday you'll understand that. Now here's looking at you, kid. There's that famous line. Well, the issue's this. There are things that are bigger than our feelings or convenience. There's right and there's wrong. And there's this 25-year-old abortion counselor who got pregnant and filmed the procedure to show women that, well, there can be a positive abortion story. Emily Letts says she's not ready to have children and should not be made to feel guilty for having an abortion, nor should anyone else. Well, two things come to mind. First, she certainly takes God out of the equation with her decision, but also with the credit she gives herself. Listen to this. I feel in awe of the fact that I can make a baby. I can make a life. Well, that said, it's interesting that she sees making a baby as more than a mere biological process. It is a baby, and it is a life. Yet, her awe is not enough to keep her from killing her baby. Since she made it, she can kill it. After all, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away, no matter who she is. Well, let's went on to say this. I knew what I was going to do was right, and here's our issue. I knew what I was going to do was right because it was right for me and no one else. And of course, she didn't include the man who got her pregnant in the decision to kill her baby. After all, it was right for her and no one else, whether her partner or her baby. And now she says she doesn't feel like a bad person. She doesn't feel sad. She doesn't feel guilty. Which brings me to the second thing that comes to mind, which actually has two parts. The first is that she's aborted her baby and she'll regret it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon and for the rest of her life. And the second is, it doesn't take much to see that the problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. Someday she'll understand that. You know, the reality is, it's too bad that people no longer put aside their personal feelings for something more important. And that's why they end up losing more than they realize until it's too late. Finally, let's talk about the fact that some are saying we have a need to change our pet culture. It's a dog-eat-dog world out there, but they say it could soon be a man-eat-dog world if we're not careful. In a piece that may not sit well with some pet owners, and I'm quoting from Newser, Eric Asadrian argues that pets are detrimental to the planet, and it's time to take action. Two German shepherds use more resources just for their annual food needs than the average Bangladeshi uses each year in total. Now, Asadrian writes in The Guardian these comments. He also says this, while pet owners may disagree that Bangladeshis have more right to exist than their precious schnookums, the truth is that pets serve little more societal purpose than keeping us company, and our planet just can't keep supporting the millions of cats and dogs that inhabit it. Well, what's the solution? Asadrian doesn't suggest that we all get rid of our pets. He wants to see our animals spayed and neutered with triple the tax on those that aren't. He also wants to see the marketing of pet products banned, and a limit on the health care we provide to our pets. He'd also like to see people turn to pets that serve other purposes, like giving milk, laying eggs, or supplying meat. Otherwise, when climate change sends food prices skyward, people may be forced to dump their pets en masse. Perhaps, now this is Asadrian, perhaps at that point the pet issue will solve itself as these packs of dogs become a bridge food for the hungry, unemployed masses. And with dogs and people eating all kinds of things they shouldn't, it's too bad most people simply eat what they're served, especially drivel like this. All rational people agree that people are more important than pets. At the same time, there is no research indicating the planet cannot support people and pets. People and pets go hungry for lots of reasons, with faulty worldview and government corruption topping the list. No one is hungry because there's not enough food to go around. With an overwhelming amount of data concerning population, renewable resources, and food production, combined with a biblical mandate to be fruitful and multiply, no one should be worried about a lack of food because we have too many mouths to feed. It's certainly true that food shortages could occur for lots of reasons, including natural disaster or war, to name two. And God's command to be fruitful and multiply doesn't apply to pets. At the same time, with current data, there is no reason to be worried about an inability to feed our pets. Most people are smart enough to get rid of their pets one way or the other if they can't afford them. We had an old dog that had become practically immobile, and my wife didn't know what to do. A friend of ours who drove a pickup with a gun rack and a gun on the rack told us if we let him know when we'd be out for a little while, the dog would simply be gone when we got back. No muss, no fuss. My wife wanted to know what he meant. She'll just disappear, he said. The point is, it's not a problem. What we have here from Asadrian is nothing new. Bad information, government solutions, and scare tactics. Let's all worry about skyrocketing prices, packs of wild dogs roaming our once peaceful neighborhoods, and then having to feed them to our children, all because of man-made climate change. And by all means, let's get the all-wise government involved to force us to spay and neuter our pets and tax those who don't. Let's ban the marketing of pet products and put those dirty pet product makers out of business. These are the kinds of wild ideas and unethical tactics and, well, oppressive solutions on which dystopian futures are built. Asadrian says that we need to change pet culture drastically. Well, with all due respect, it's not our pet culture that's giving us all the problems. Here's the issue. God gave us dominion over the animals. We can use them to help us in our work, and we can make them pets for our enjoyment. Yes, we can eat them if we like. And it's good to know we have the God-given gift of intelligence to discover and create all kinds of ways to feed ourselves and our animals. It's good to know as God's vice regents, we have the capacity to steward the earth and everything in it better and better over time. And it's good to know that we do indeed know how to take care of our pets as the need arises, one way or the other. Again, it's not a problem. You've been listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news and culture from a biblical worldview. Sign up to receive The Dean's List by email along with other items of interest that deanslistcommentary@gmail.com or simply go to our website, trueworldview.net. You'll find other helpful resources. I'm Paul Dean. Join me next time for The Dean's List.